Cotton Malone hated enclosed spaces. His current unease was amplified by a packed cable car. Most of the passengers were on vacation, dressed in colorful garb, shouldering poles and skis. He sensed a variety of nationalities. Some Italians, a few Swiss, a handful of French, but mainly Germans. He'd been one of the first to climb aboard, and to relieve his discomfort, he'd made his way close to one of the frosty windows. 10,000 feet above and closing, the Zugspitze stood silhouetted against a steel-blue sky, the imposing gray summit draped in a late autumn snow. Not smart agreeing to this location. The car continued its giddy ascent, passing one of several steel trestles that rose from the rocky crags. He was unnerved, and not simply from the crowded surroundings. Ghosts awaited him atop Germany's highest peak. He'd avoided this rendezvous for nearly 4 decades. People like him, who buried their past so determinedly, should not help it from the grave so easily. Yet here he was, doing exactly that. Vibrations slowed as the car entered, then stopped at the summit station. Skiers fluttered off toward another lift that would take them down to a high-altitude quarry where a chalet and slopes waited. He didn't ski, never had, never wanted to. He made his way through the visitor center, identified by a yellow placard as Muncha House. A restaurant dominated one half of the building. The rest housed a theater, a snack bar, an observatory, souvenir shops, and a weather station. He pushed through thick glass doors and stepped out onto a railed terrace. Bracing alpine air stung his lips. According to Stephanie Nell, his contact should be waiting on the observation deck. One thing was obvious. 10,000 feet in the high Alps certainly added a heightened measure of privacy to their meeting. The Zugspitze lay on the border. A succession of snowy crags rose south toward Austria. To the north spanned a soup bowl valley ringed by rock-ribbed peaks. A gauze of frosty mist shielded the German village of Garmisch and its companion, Partenkirchen. Both were sports meccas, and the region catered not only to skiing, but also bobsledding, skating, and curling. More sports he'd avoided. The observation deck was deserted save for an elderly couple and a few skiers who had apparently paused to enjoy the view. He'd come to solve a mystery, one that had preyed on his mind ever since that day when the men in uniforms came to tell his mother that her husband was dead. Contact was lost with the submarine 48 hours ago. We dispatched search and rescue ships to the North Atlantic, which have combed the last known position. Wreckage was found 6 hours ago. We waited to tell the families until we were sure there was no chance of survivors. His mother had never cried. Not her way. But that didn't mean she wasn't devastated. Years passed before questions formed in his teenage mind. The government offered little explanation beyond official releases. When he'd first joined the Navy, he'd tried to access the Court of Inquiry's investigative report on the sub's sinking, but learned it was classified. He'd tried again after becoming a Justice Department agent, possessed of a high security clearance. No luck. When Gary, his 15-year-old, visited over the summer, he'd faced new questions. Gary had never known his grandfather, but the boy had wanted to know more about him, and especially how he died. The press had covered the sinking of the USS Blazek in November 1971, so they'd read many of the old accounts on the Internet. Their talk had rekindled his own doubts, enough that he'd finally done something about them. He plunged balled fists into his parka and wandered the terrace. Telescopes dotted the railing. At one stood a woman, her dark hair tied in an unflattering bun. She was dressed in a bright outfit, skis and poles propped beside her, studying the valley below. He casually walked over. One rule he'd learned long ago: never hurry. It only bred trouble. "Quite a scene," he said. She turned. "Certainly is." Her face was the color of cinnamon, which, combined with what he regarded as Egyptian features in her mouth, nose, and eyes, signaled some Middle Eastern ancestry. "I'm Cotton Malone." "How did you know I was the one who came to meet you?" He motioned at the brown envelope lying at the base of the telescope. Apparently, this is not a high-pressure mission. He smiled. Just running an errand? Something like that. I was coming to ski. A week off, finally. Always wanted to do it. Stephanie asked if I could bring... She motioned at the envelope. That along. She went back to her viewing. You mind if I finish this? It costs a euro, and I want to see what's down there. She revolved the telescope, studying the German valley that stretched for miles below. You have a name? He asked. Jessica, she said, her eyes still to the eyepiece. He reached for the envelope. Her boot blocked the way. Not yet. Stephanie said to make sure you understand that the two of you are even. Last year he'd helped out his old boss in France. She'd told him then that she owed him a favor and that he should use it wisely. And he had. Agreed. Debt paid. She turned from the telescope. Wind reddened her cheeks. I've heard about you at the Magellan Billet. A bit of a legend. One of the original 12 agents. I didn't realize I was so popular. Stephanie said you were modest, too. He wasn't in the mood for compliments. The past awaited him. Could I have the file? Her eyes sparked. Sure. He retrieved the envelope. The first thought that flashed through his mind was how something so thin might answer so many questions. That must be important, she said. Another lesson. Ignore what you don't want to answer.